Good morning. It is October 25th. It is a bright, cool morning in New York City. The cat is bouncing off the walls, and this is your Indignity Morning Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Skoka, taking a look at the day and the news. The Wall Street Journal reported last night that Elon Musk, currently the world's richest person, a major U.S. government contractor, and the most prominent surrogate for Donald Trump's presidential campaign, has been, the paper writes, in regular contact with Russian President Vladimir Putin since late 2022. At one point, the paper reports, Putin asked the billionaire to avoid activating his Starlink satellite internet service over Taiwan as a favor to Chinese leader Xi Jinping, said two people briefed on the request. Given Musk's previously reported subservience to the Chinese government as a result of his company's financial dependence on access to China, she probably could have asked him directly. But friends do favors for friends, and if there's one thing Putin knows, it's how to keep oligarchs in a position of supplication. The more money and power you have, the more worried you are that someone with more money and more power could take it away from you. Relatedly, NPR reports that The Washington Post, under Jeff Bezos, seems uncertain whether it's going to endorse Kamala Harris for president. Less than 2 weeks before Election Day, NPR writes, "The Post's opinion section staff does not know whether the paper will run an editorial endorsement for president." The billionaire owner of the Los Angeles Times, Patrick Soon-Shiong, already killed that paper's Harris endorsement, causing multiple leaders of the opinion section to quit the paper. Donald Trump has already made it clear that he will retaliate against publications and companies that he believes to be his enemies if he gets the presidency back, although it seems foolish and wishful for the people in charge of those enterprises to convince themselves there's any predictable way to stay on Trump's good side. But speaking of consequences, or the lack thereof, going back to the Wall Street Journal's Musk story, his contacts with Putin, the paper writes, raise potential national security concerns among some in the current administration, given Putin's role as one of America's chief adversaries. Musk, the story continues, has forged deep business ties with U.S. military and intelligence agencies, giving him unique visibility into some of America's most sensitive space programs. SpaceX, which operates the Starlink service, won a $1.8 billion classified contract in 2021 and is the primary rocket launcher for the Pentagon and NASA. Musk has a security clearance that allows him access to certain classified information. That sounds like something that the government should be pretty concerned about, huh? The story continues, knowledge of Musk's Kremlin contacts appears to be a closely held secret in government. Several White House officials said they weren't aware of them. A Pentagon spokesperson gave the journal a blanket no comment about discussing security clearances. And the story continues, one person aware of the conversations said the government faces a dilemma because it is so dependent on the billionaire's technologies. SpaceX launches vital national security satellites into orbit and is the company NASA relies on to transport astronauts to and from the International Space Station. They don't love it, the person said, referring to the Musk-Putin contact. The person, however, said no alerts have been raised by the administration over possible security breaches by Musk. Right, that's not a dilemma. A dilemma is when you're caught between two irresolvable problems. Here, there's only one problem. The government has outsourced vital responsibilities to a greedy, corrupt, and drug-addled idiot, a political partisan driven by racist and paranoid beliefs, who is fundamentally dependent on unfriendly foreign superpowers. Just take the man's rockets away. If you can't nationalize the space program, which is, and always has been, the friendly public-facing side of War Department R&D, then there isn't anything you can do in the national interest. Turning to today's New York Times, but once again, not to the front page right away, the news that Donald Trump yesterday said that he would fire Special Counsel Jack Smith, the prosecutor who is running two criminal cases against him, if he wins election, is on page A21 of the paper, used essentially as a throwaway line in a procedural update about motions in Smith's election interference case against Trump. The Times did write another story, treating Trump's desire to fire Smith as news in its own right, but only online. Even though Smith's prosecutions have been front-page news, and the election is front-page news, the news that Trump would use the election to end his prosecutions somehow doesn't rate. What did make page one? The lead story is Harris hunting for white votes in working class, where she lags most, vice president's allies in labor pound doors in swing states, which sounds like an article about Kamala Harris, but is really an occasion for Jonathan Weissman. Yes, the guy who notoriously tweeted out that non-white Democrats didn't count as Southerners or Midwesterners, to hold forth on the profound blue-collar affinity for Donald J. Trump. Blue-collar here, as usual, is a synonym for white working class, and Weissman also explicitly uses it as a stand-in for educational attainment. If educational attainment is a stand-in for class, he writes, the white working class trusts Mr. Trump. 56% say he would help them best, compared with 41% who say that about the vice president. This moves some portion of the local wealthy business class, the real ideological backbone of Trump's support, into the same category as their exploited workers. But what is front page coverage in election season four, if not advancing ill-defined claims about the public mood? The rest of the top of the front page is a five-column photo of the cheering crowd at the championship parade for the WNBA champion New York Liberty. The parade story is on page B8. And down below that, just peeking over the fold, the story is Writing Orders Set for Trump to Sign in 25, a piece about how the America First Policy Institute, a Trumpist think tank founded by Texas plutocrats, is doing a competing version of the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 without bragging about it, and seems to be running as much as anyone is the Trump transition in waiting. While drafting, the Times writes, nearly 300 executive orders ready for Mr. Trump's signature should he win the election. Among the items in its America First Agenda book, the Times writes, the group calls for halting federal funding for Planned Parenthood and for mandatory ultrasounds before abortions, including those carried out with medication. It seeks to make concealed weapons permits reciprocal in all 50 states, increase petroleum production, remove the United States from the Paris Agreement, impose work requirements on Medicaid recipients, and establish legally only two genders. And the story says it calls for the elimination of nearly all civil service protections for federal workers by making them at-will employees. Seems like that would be something working-class voters would be concerned about, if you define working-class as working for a paycheck to meet your material needs without controlling the means of production. The story notes that one of Trump's official transition leaders, the former Small Business Administration head and professional wrestling mogul Linda McMahon, came directly from the America First Policy Institute. It does not mention, nor does the Times appear to have mentioned anywhere else, that Linda McMahon, along with her husband Vince McMahon, was sued this week by five John Does, who are former ring boys for World Wrestling Entertainment, who say, CNN writes, that the McMahons knowingly allowed former ringside announcer Melvin Phillips Jr. to use his position to sexually exploit children as young as 12 and 13 years old. Their employment as ring boys, CNN writes, was a guise for sexually exploiting the boys, which Phillips would even do in front of wrestlers and executives in the locker area, the lawsuit alleges. Again, that's one of the two leaders of the Trump transition team. Will it ever be news that's fit to print? Let's keep looking. That is the news. Thank you for listening. The Indignity Morning Podcast is edited by Joe McLeod. The theme song is composed and performed by Max Cocahoe. Our podcasting is sustained by the financial support of the paid subscribers to Indignity, or the people who use our tip button. So please do chip in if you haven't. Have a pleasant and refreshing weekend, and if all goes well, we will talk again on Monday.